Hey, everybody. This week, we're talking about the movie WALL-E.
Hit the music.
Buddy, my name is Michael Flaherty,
and I'm Colleen Flaherty.
And as mentioned, this is the WALL-E, the film,
and this podcast is Flaherty's on Films, where we like to talk about films on the AFI 100. But now we are doing the fan requested AFI 100.
That's right. You could be a fan listening, whoever you are.
Yeah, just give us 5 stars on iTunes.
That's
and follow
a
us on
requirement.
Facebook.
You have to do that.
You have to do that.
Prove it. Like screenshot it and show it to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Michael, what is WALL-E about?
I'm going to read the description so that we all can know. In the distant future, a small waste-collecting robot inadvertently embarks upon a space journey that will ultimately decide the fate of mankind.
Michael, what did you think of the film WALL-E?
I think that description I just read is a little bit better than the film I watched. Here's what I think.
Whoa. I'm ready for this hot take.
It's not that hot. The robots, super cute. Super cute so robots. Cute. When they fall in love, super cute. So cute when they fall in love. Everything else.
I wish everyone at home could see how intense your facial
everything
expressions
else
are.
Is kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Wow. Oof. Scorched from that hot take.
From the hot take. Yeah, you go ahead.
Here's my lukewarm
take. Let's see how long your take's been in the oven.
Not long, because I just really liked it.
Oh, okay.
Here's my hot take. I think this might be Pixar's best film.
Oh, heavily disagree.
Not my favorite one, but I think maybe their best one. And I will defend that more later.
All right, perfect. I'll attack you. But first, we're going to go to our first segment, BAM.
Time for Sam. This is the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some super cool facts about the film. Sam, take it away.
In 1994, four writers of Pixar gathered for lunch and to brainstorm new projects as they were wrapping up on Toy Story. This lunch would arguably go down as one of the most creative meals of all time, as it would be the birthplace of A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, and finally, WALL-E.
Was each of the four people at the lunch one of the ideas? And who was the Bug's Life guy?
I mean, he did okay. He did all right.
They don't talk to him.
Yeah,
anymore.
He also bought lunch, so it's fine.
It's fine. The idea of WALL-E came up from the question, what if mankind had to leave Earth and somebody forgot to turn off the last robot?
Mm.
So the project would have a slow start as the other films would take priority, including Bug's Life. And
I liked Bug's Life as a kid, by the way. They had that NSYNC song. Anyway, please continue.
And they also had Ants, which came up before, which was a really weird Woody.
They didn't have Ants.
A-N-T-Z.
Is not Pixar.
No, I know it's not Pixar, but it came out around the same time. But it was a super weird film.
Yeah.
I like Ants more than Bug's Life. I'm on Team Ants.
Scorching!
Scorching. Go ahead, Sam.
So... the other films would take priorities, and the different writers would be pulled away to work on each of them. So, like, you'd get two of them together, and then one would get pulled away, and then he'd get another friend, but then... So it just really took time for this movie to kind of get worked out. As time marched on, the story itself would morph. The original idea was that the ship Eve brings WALL-E back to would be filled with blob aliens who look like green jello, and it would only be at the very end... kind of like a Planet of the Apes moment, that the audience would realize that these blobs were actually humans who had just been in space too long, so their bodies had become blobs. Although somewhat scientifically accurate, shouldn't spend too much time in space.
I've heard it messes with your bone density.
It does. This idea would be scrapped due to confusion and general creepiness. Eventually, the story would become focused on the love story between WALL-E and Eve that we know today. By the way, WALL-E stands for Waste Allocation Load Lifter Earth Class.
They pulled that out of their ass. It could mean anything.
100%. And Eve stands for Extraterrestrial Vegetation Evaluator.
Yeah, sure it does.
So to create the world of a dystopian Earth and the futuristic space, the designers had to get creative. So for inspiration, they looked at pictures of Chernobyl and Sofia, Bulgaria, which apparently has problems storing its garbage. So to kind of put this into context, the movie that had just come out was Finding Nemo for Pixar.
Which is the best Pixar film.
That's my favorite one,
actually. And the best one.
Which really, I think we can all agree, just went over the top in amazingness for its graphics of the water.
Yeah.
So they wanted to bring, like, if you can do that with the water, what can we bring to the space?
And I think they had that for every Pixar film. I think every Pixar film sort of focused on one thing graphically.
Having a new thing graphically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just kind of really. So
it was Toy Story 2's Andy looking like a human.
That's exactly correct. Good job.
Okay, I did it.
But like Brave, it was like, the rocks look real. I remember that. I'm like, it's hard to make it look like natural, organic life.
And her hair.
We don't all have to pause. We could just continue.
So this one really was like the two differences, like the gritty, like dystopian world that's just filled with garbage. And then the clean space that was almost like it was futuristic, obviously, but was supposed to be really homage to the classic space movies and TV shows.
Cool.
And as this movie's heroes were robots, the creators watched every Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton film during their lunches to explore how best to use visual storytelling.
Sounds like they had an improper work-life balance.
Perhaps.
I mean,
is that one of your facts?
Let's talk about Pixar and how it is working there.
Yeah.
So to bring the robots and their worlds to life, they turned to voice actor Ben Burtt. Burtt had just finished work on Star Wars and wasn't super excited about playing a robot. However, when
Who is Ben Burtt?
In what?
Star Wars.
He is R2-D2.
Oh, okay, cool.
All of the...
Wait, just like the guy... I mean... No, that's a synthesizer. That's not a person.
It's a person.
No. No, okay, so R2-D2 does have some beep beep boop, but then there's the one scream he does where he goes, "Mow!" Is that Ben Burtt?
That's Ben Burtt.
Okay, but Beep Boop Beep Boop is not him.
He does the Beep Boop Beep Boop
too. He does not do Beep Boop Beep Boop.
It says he's the voice of R2-D2.
I think just the wow part.
You think he just does one little...
It's clearly synthesizers for the Beep Boops.
I mean, when did synthesizers come out? The first movie was 77.
Yeah, oh, the 70s with synthesizers.
I think of the 80s with synthesizers.
Nah.
But anyways, he did R2-D2. And he's also done like Indiana
Some
Jones, and he's done E.T.
Michael, you are really mad about this.
I'm very upset.
But anyways, so he went into this pitch, and it changed his mind. To quote Burtt, I had just
finished... Is it weird that R2-D2 screams? Anyway, why did they program that?
Wait. That's a good point.
Sorry.
Why did they program sentience? It's probably a larger question.
This protocol droid, he needs some sass. That's what they were thinking from C-3PO. So sorry, Samantha. We're just the worst.
I love it. So to quote Burtt, I had just finished my 29-year, 10-month tour of duty with Star Wars, and I thought, well, at least I don't have to do any more robots. But when Pixar called, I could see this was something more like a Frank Capra romance with Buster Keaton thrown in. And you had the challenge of not only creating the sound of this fantasy world, but the even bigger task of creating principal characters built out of the sound.
Just a little follow-up. Ben Burtt is also a sound designer, so he himself used a synthesizer and his own vocalizations.
Okay.
He did both of those things.
Okay, well, I mean, it was the synthizer. He did not do beep boop beep.
But he also added his own vocalizations with his analog synthesizer.
I accept that.
Okay.
I accept it.
Can we agree that he's just really talented?
He's really good!
So over 2 years, he would record 2,500 different sounds for the film, which is twice the average of his work he did on Star Wars films.
Damn.
Does Wally make a lot of different noises?
It was interesting. Like, I read a bunch of articles about the different ways he did things, like when the cricket runs across, that's actually handcuffs being closed and opened. So just little different things like that. But if you think of, I think the first dialogue's not for like 22 minutes.
At least.
So.
It's a while. It depends if you count the like Wally as dialogue or not.
Right. It was actually the most sounds he's ever done for a film. Let's see here. So let's talk about Wally's design, the adorable little garbage robot.
Can I just say before we go, this is easily the best part of the film, is Wally's design. So I'm very excited about this fact.
So for Wally's design, they were really struggling on how to make this character that was very expressive, but was also designed to serve a purpose. The way they talk about it is when you have a robot, there's two different types. There's the R2-D2 that serves like a purpose, like he's there to get something done. And then there's the robots that are actually like people, like think the Tin Man. So
I was thinking Terminator.
Or Terminator. Yeah, sure. Go with that.
I mean, he had a thing to do.
He had a purpose. It's in his name.
So the struggle they had here is that Wally was an R2-D2. His entire being was to serve a purpose. But he had to have a personality like you would with, say, the Tin Man. So they had to kind of balance that out. And the way they mainly...
R2-D2 has a personality. But anyway, go on.
Does he? Yes, he screams.
He screams.
He's very brave.
That's
and he likes helping
true.
Out his friends.
That's true.
Those are qualities.
You know what? I don't have the quote here, but someone was talking about that with robots, and they were like, I think that robots are like pets and children, where you want them to have a little bit of like innocence so that you can insert your own personality into it. Like
a dog.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I think he's hungry. Like, you have no idea, but you're imposing that thought onto it. Like,
it's fun to think about.
Yeah, and you do that with Kit. You do that with your daughter, I'm sure.
Sure.
Yeah. So
wait, what the fuck? What was that last bit?
She's saying toddlers don't really have real personalities.
Oh, that's very
so you
true.
Kind of impose them on yourself by how their actions.
Oh, Elaine really likes science. No, she doesn't.
Well, she said 2-3 times. That must be counting.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you impose your own ideas.
Yes.
So that's kind of the struggle they had with Wally, is they had to kind of create this robot that would be realistic, but at the same point be able to express emotions and be the heart of this film, which robots are not known to be the heart of. So anyways, so they had a hard time coming up with his design, especially since like it had to be practical. They kept trying to throw in elbows in him, and they're like, that makes no sense because his whole thing is just putting garbage in him, so he wouldn't have elbows. That was a huge conflict. I read a lot about the stupid elbows, but anyway, he doesn't have elbows. The main thing that they focused on was his eyes. So
that's a Disney thing, right? Like, it's all in the eyes for sympathy and empathy in a character.
It was really interesting because they were saying like how they had to find sympathy with him. And one way to make him vulnerable was to have his eyes be able to zoom in and out. And I was like, that's interesting. But at the same point, like, I get that. Like, when sure. he does that.
They also display his life meter right on his fucking chest. So, like, I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But anyway.
I mean, it makes sense.
Shut up.
If it's a thing you own, don't you like the battery life prominently displayed?
We'll talk about it.
Okay.
So, one of the artists had gone to a baseball game. And
whoa. Where's this going?
He was in the nosebleed seats. And he couldn't see, so someone gave him a pair of binoculars. And the binoculars were shaped so oddly. He said, I didn't even watch the first inning because I was just staring at these binoculars. And those binoculars would become the outline for Wally's eyes.
So he gives his entire life to Pixar, and he can't even afford decent baseball tickets. What are they doing to their employees over there?
During the development of Toy Story 2, they were so rushed, they were on so much crunch, that someone came into work and were working, and they realized that they left their baby in the car. Just because they were like...
That's a horrifying story!
Anyway, please continue.
Is that real?
That's real.
Oh, God!
Because for Toy Story 2, had like a notoriously troubled development, and they were like 12-hour days, like every single day.
The baby's okay?
I'm sure the babies are fine, yeah.
Okay.
Damn.
Let's just go with the baby's okay.
Okay, well, we'll move past Wally then. So Wally took a lot to design because of all the complications of creating him and creating this expression on what was supposed to be a very functional robot.
Man, they fucking nailed it. I just gotta say it. I've never succeeded as much as they succeeded. Ever.
It's just really cool. There are lots of nits and bolts to it. Like, how his arms work, they actually got the inspiration from a printer.
Oh.
So just different things. It was a lot to kind of create him because he had to be very functional.
Well, yeah, he looks like a legitimate trash robot. That's also adorable.
Yeah, they talked that about how they went to a bunch of different places and they were like listing off like all the places they went to look at robots. But one of them was like, and then they went and they actually borrowed a bomb like testing robot. And I was like, you can borrow those? But anyways, so
it doesn't come with the bomb.
That's comforting to know.
You know, it's comforting. They can lend him out because they just don't need him that much.
Oh, that is comforting.
Yeah. We need all the peace testing robots. Do you have any?
So Wally was kind of the big one. But then with Eve, they just wanted a cool design. So Eve was actually co-designed by Apple's Jonathan Ive.
Obviously.
Who had designed iPod.
Jonathan Ive.
Ive.
Thank you.
Do you know him personally?
He's just always in the advertisements.
Oh, is he?
The advertisements?
In the advertisements!
What are the advertisements that they...
From Apple. Like
that Jonathan Ive comes out and goes, I did that. Is that how that goes?
See that? That was me. I like to give my credit.
That's a thing that Apple
that's
does.
That's what famously Johnny.
So when they're dancing with those silhouettes, which I assume is now a 10-year-old advertisement, one of those is Jonathan.
No, it's like in those Apple reveals, like, we've really come out with the world's best product.
The MacBook is our most popular Mac. But what we've done, and we've made a habit of doing this at Apple, is we decided just to start over.
Is he British?
He's got some kind of accent. You know, could be British, could be whatever.
Anyway, wow, we are just... He is British.
He's awesome.
We're all over the place today. Go on, Sam.
So let's round out our group of friends. We also have Wally's pet cockroach. He was nicknamed Hal by the Pixar team, and this was an obvious nod to 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Which there's like a million... Space Odyssey stuff things.
So this movie, it has a first for Pixar. First ever. Anyone know? No pressure.
Space.
No. Did you guys not see Toy Story? It was number 99 on your list.
Oh yeah. Wait. Space in it?
Yeah. Went to infinity and beyond.
In Toy Story 2, they do the whole space.
In Toy Story 2? That's not one.
But that's before.
Oh, irrelevant. Okay. No, this is the first instance in a Pixar film of using live action in the animation.
I feel bad for me that I didn't get that.
Yes. So legendary actor Fred Willard appears as the head of the big and large
great
company.
Actor.
And nice. Apparently he was quoted as saying, I appear on a TV monitor and I'm more than a voice. Jeff Garland is a voice, but people are saying, oh, you're a voice. No, I actually appear. People will say, oh, that's Fred.
This is like an old guy.
I can imagine him giving
really over-explaining his part.
So speaking of other cameos, the last piece of debris that clears away from Wally as he leaves Earth's atmosphere is the Russian satellite Sputnik.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Okay.
I felt so smart.
Question!
Answer!
Are there any Buzz Lightyear references in the movie?
There are so many Easter eggs, I didn't even dive into it.
That wasn't the question.
I don't think there's any Buzz Lightyear that I can think of. The Pizza Planet truck is there.
That's good. But I want a Buzz Lightyear reference.
I don't think there's Buzz Lightyear.
That's my
I
favorite.
I think that'd be a little too obvious.
And Buzz Pizza Lightyear, Planet isn't?
Buzz Lightyear is my favorite
I didn't notice it,
Pixar
so.
Character. So that's what I want.
Well, Pizza Planet is in every one of the Pixar films.
Fair enough.
Okay. So, WALL-E premiered in theaters and would gross $223.8 million in the United States and Canada alone. It would become the ninth highest grossing film of 2008.
That's it?
Well, okay. So, other films that came out that year, The Dark Knight, Slumdog Millionaire, Milk. So, there was some tough competition.
Milk? Did Milk beat this?
Milk beat it for original screenplay.
Not for profits.
No. Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't actually know.
No.
That's crazy to be the ninth highest, like a Disney Pixar film.
When did Transformers come out? I bet that beat it.
Maybe.
It was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, which ties it for most nominated Academy Award nominations of any animated film besides Beauty and the Beast.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's really good.
It would win one. It would win Best Animated Feature, but it would be nominated for Best Original Screenplay, Best Original Score, Best Original Song, Sound Editing, and Sound Mixing.
Are you ready to be mad about what beat WALL-E?
Yeah.
So Dark Knight was number one. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is number two.
Not surprised.
Three is Kung Fu Panda. Four is Hancock. Five is understandable. It's Mamma Mia.
Ooh, good
that's
movie.
Dang it then.
Six, Madagascar 2. Seven, Quantum of Solace.
That one, that's the James Bond film.
Here's a shocker at number eight, Iron Man.
Whoa, that's far down.
Yeah, right?
What a time.
What a time. Why can't we just let people Sam do her job?
People at the time is like, a Marvel film? Sure, I'll see that.
After Madagascar 2.
Yeah.
So this movie actually brought on a little bit of a controversy with the Academy Awards. So the idea behind it was it won for Best Anime Picture, but it was so good that people were like, it should have been nominated not for Best Animated, but just Best Picture in general. And it kind of started up this controversy of, would you be able to have an animated film in the Best Picture if you have the category of Best Animated? So that kind of stirred it up. Didn't ever get resolved. Not a big problem. But
was that like the popular film category that they had for a second?
Yeah, right. But here's your question of the week.
Ooh.
How many animated films have actually been nominated for Best Picture?
Nominated, but not won.
I will tell you right now, none have won. But how many have actually been nominated? And not Best Animated Film, the actual Best Picture Award.
I have a guess.
You go first.
One.
Damn it, that was my guess. Two.
Three.
Yes!
Damn it.
The first and the best to be nominated, and this was actually before the animated one was a thing, but Beauty and the Beast, followed by 2009's Up and 2010's Toy Story 3. So even though the situation wasn't per se resolved, the next two Pixar films did become best. So you could argue that WALL-E opened the gate for those. We'll go with that. Let me see here. My last fact for you guys today. So a lot of people read a lot into this film about its political implications, about...
Yeah.
About everything.
Climate change, corporations.
There's a lot. According to Pixar, who is famously apolitical, there is no political message in this film.
Stupid.
It is
no,
a love
stupid.
Story between robots.
Dumb.
And my last fact is this quote for you today. I knew I was going into territory that was basically the same stuff, but I don't have a political bend or... ecological message to push. I don't mind that it supports this kind of view. It's certainly a good citizen kind of way to be, but everything I wanted to do was based on the film's love story, The Last Robot on Earth, the sentence that we first came up with in 1994.
What a coward. That's stupid. This is like, it's so obvious. The film makes no sense if there's no agenda. Anyway, sorry. Anyway, that was Bam.
Time for Sam.
What a great segment.
That's such a fucking good
segment. I was so angry there. I'm so sorry.
Dude, I've been angry like 10 times in this episode.
Anyway.
Now we go to our second segment.
Well, before we do that, should say...
This was our... Okay,
oh,
go ahead.
Sorry.
Our second segment is called We Read What People Have Said About This Film From Our Fans... Who have suggested this film. We need
a
snappier title.
Great. Yeah.
It's a pretty good title. So this film was nominated by Junis Norman. Anybody else?
Nope.
So just Junis. And she has written us a little ditty about the film, and we are going to read it. And I've already introduced it, so I think it's up to Colleen to read the first paragraph.
WALL-E hits all the criteria for a top 100 film. Feature length, check. Critical recognition, check. Major award winner, check. 9 times. Popular with time, I mean, it's only been a short 10 years. However, it appears this movie remains popular as just this month, The New York Times rated it as one of the top 50 things to watch on Disney Plus right now.
Cultural impact, major check. This is the main reason the film stands out to me to earn a spot in the AFI's top 100. This film is extremely current as it applies to a world issue that continues to worsen. Greta Thunberg is sailing the world to stand up for the environment.
I like that she said sailing the world. That's cute.
Jane Fonda is getting arrested on a weekly basis, and we have an administration that continues to be climate change deniers and find our future to be a joke. This movie hits home. The future is terrifying to many right now, and WALL-E paints a vision for what is possible.
See, this is why I think this is so bullshit. Like, I'm sure that was just corporate speak to say, oh, we don't care about politics, but come on. Like, whatever.
I have some things to say about that, but let's wait.
Alyssa Wilkinson at Fox describes the film's impact perfectly. WALL-E's vision of the future is a cautionary dystopia wrapped up in a children's tale, and a very funny and skillfully made one, too. For the film's first 40 minutes, film's first 40 minutes are virtually wordless, a masterpiece of modern silent filmmaking. Yet while we're squealing over the cute robots, and I am, we can't forget to imagine the world that gave rise to WALL-E's trash-strewn wasteland and its more well-off humans. Disintegration into helpless, shapeless flesh globules who've lost the ability to create, think, or have real relationships. Futuristic science fiction is at its best when it makes us take a hard look at our own world. Junus, that was great.
Thank you so much, Junus.
Thank you for that.
That's awesome. I don't think I would ever write that for someone else's podcast.
No, but we're not
very... I would recommend Pirates of the Caribbean, but I'm not going to write a whole paragraph about it.
We're not kind people, though.
No, we're not nice. Anyway, now to our next segment, Critics Corner. We hear what the critics think. These are like people who really think about films and are really smart.
So I got to say, we always go through the Amazon one-star reviews. What do you think are the number one complaint about WALL-E? What would you think?
The humans.
What do you mean?
I couldn't think of anything.
Well, it's tied between boring and too lefty.
Oh, that's so obvious. I should have got that.
You should have gotten that.
Damn it.
Quite a beloved film. Rotten Tomatoes puts it at 95% for critics, 90% for audience. Here's what David Calhoun of Time Out. I wonder a little what kids will make of the long silence of the first half, followed by the disoriented mania of the second. There's nothing here that's not wonderfully imagined and lovingly presented. I wonder if this is actually a good kids film.
I think it is. Yeah.
Okay.
It's cute. Here's from P. Miller. The P probably stands for Patrick. My husband and I eagerly looked forward.
Nice that you made him gay.
Wait, what?
You called him Patrick, and then it's my husband and I?
My husband and I, they're both men.
Which he's fine with.
Which I'm fine with. I eagerly looked forward to receiving our pre-ordered copy of WALL-E from Amazon, as the trailers had given us high expectations for another excellent and entertaining Pixar product we could share with our grandchildren. Okay, so they're both old. That's important. Instead, what we received was a computer animated forum for advancing today's political agendas, which we haven't established. Like, today's political, is that even bad? Let's continue. We wanted entertainment and a state-of-the-art animation for ourselves and our grandchildren, not hackneyed political whining and attempts at mind control and thought policing of the very young and impressionable people who will watch this movie. If those of you considering buying this movie have grown steadily weary of Hollywood and the government attempting to dictate your value system,
boy, am I tired of it.
Through every possible venue, you should definitely avoid this movie. If Disney is compelled to politicize their movies, then the movies should be provided to the public at no cost, as is the case with other political media.
I'm pretty sure you have to, like, pay for Ayn Rand films.
Yeah, dude, The Fountainhead, that's definitely $250 at this point.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's an equally long review. One of the most imaginatively made and individual piece of work that the audacious Pixar has developed is Derek Malcolm of the London Evening Standard. Michael?
Here's from Warden, who's from the publication Amazon. Here is a minimalist approach to children's movies. Forget the storyline. Forget what was learned in Finding Nemo. The cricket ends up as the pathetic device. Create a film without dialogue or characterization, except for the scene where the robot runs about calling Eve's name. have an environmental message that would completely baffle little children before putting them to sleep, embrace the abstract while making some obtuse reference to fat people drifting along on floating rafts who cannot do it for themselves. I'm kind of lost in this review currently. What this has to do with WALL-E is a lost cause. Oh, yes. Create a captain character who has no personality, who is pathetic. If you're pathetic, you do kind of have a personality.
Right.
That's my little editorial. Who would have believed that Walt Disney would forget their primary market? Children.
Walt Disney's dead. Does he know that?
To idiot.
That was actually a common, like, boring, and no, my kids hate this because it's boring.
Yeah.
If anyone doubted that Pixar is the most creative outfit in modern motion pictures, this movie should convince them. It is a genuine masterpiece. A word I don't use often, says Paul Bryans of the Sydney Morning Herald.
Here's from MS612, the famous reviewer from Amazon. This is the dumbest kids movie I have ever had to watch. My son likes to watch it once every 8 months or so, but he could barely get through the entire thing. Why does he like it then? What? It's almost like a silent kids film. Weird.
That's so... here's what I love about that review is the specificity of him watching it every 8 months and this reviewer calling out how bad their son's taste in movies is.
That's pretty good. That was Critics Corner. Now we're going to go to our least favorite part.
Michael, what's your least favorite part of this film? It feels like you have a lot to say.
No, I don't have a lot to say. I just don't think this film is a very good story. Which is a pretty big deal. Here's just a little bit of context. I'm going to talk about myself for 1 second.
Oh, boy.
One of my favorite Pixar things is the short film Paper Man, I believe it's called. Have you seen it?
Maybe.
It's sort of a black and white. It's basically the story of WALL-E because it's just a man and a woman falling in love. Yeah, and it's like...
Just remembered it. It's really good.
It's really fucking good. And it's like 10 minutes long, and it's really simple, and the animation is super beautiful. So I don't mind... And it's all silent. So I don't mind like silent films, people falling in love. But just the construction of this movie, I think, is really bad.
Really bad?
The robots, super cute. Yeah. The romance of the robots, super good. But it's a whole movie, and it's got... That's the A plot. And the B plot is like this whole secondary thing that I just am so weirded out by. It's so strange. And it doesn't really connect. And the movie tries to connect. And the one big moment where it does try to really connect the two, I feel like really failed.
Which is?
It's late in the movie. So one of the big plot things is WALL-E constantly looks at Eve's hand and is like, I'm going to hold her hand. And that's really, really cute. And then in like kind of a climactic moment of the film, Eve reaches her hand out to him and he pushes it aside so that he can go to the plant.
Yeah.
But it's like, do you care about the plant? Like, I did not buy that at all.
I so disagree.
Oh, okay.
I think my least favorite part of it is I do think it's maybe a little heavy-handed despite it having no political agenda.
I am excited for how different our opinions are because I disagree with that too.
You don't think it's heavy-handed?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I think that the overarching theme is like about finding the best in humanity. And that's even though they're robots, like their love for each other and WALL-E's empathy.
That's a stretch.
That's how I felt watching it. Like I felt.
I'm saying what you felt wrong.
Okay,
fair enough. You feel wrong.
Like, WALL-E cares about Eve, but he also cares about other people, even though they don't do anything for him.
Does he?
Yeah, remember when WALL-E first meets a guy, he falls off his chair, so he helps him up, and then he introduces himself.
That's just like politeness. It's courtesy.
Because he just cares. And he cares about this plant because he cares about Eve, and it's so lovely. And it's this idea that hope is never lost. It's a very important...
I think if all the humans died, WALL-E would not have cared.
He cares about everything. How dare you?
I don't feel the connection to the human plot at all.
I so disagree. I think it's really lovely. And it's such a cute, lovely plot, kind of with a darker theme that still has hope in the end. And I just think it's so beautifully constructed. I don't agree with you at all
Yeah, fair enough.
That okay. What's your favorite part?
Actually, can I just say one more thing? Because yes, I don't know if it's going to fit anywhere else. Like, the movie, as you say, has messages where it's like, okay, I get it. Because it's like so heavy-handed. But me personally, as I watched it, I'm like, actually, I don't know if I do get it. Because like, it starts off with like, it's a our Earth is dead and there's trash everywhere. So I'm like, all right, environmentalism. Got it. You've got to say
and
no
corporate
more.
Takeover.
Right. And then like, everything's good at the big and large corporation. Like, okay, capitalism. Got it. Got the themes. But then as the movie went on, I'm like, wait, what are the themes exactly? And the reason why I asked this is for two reasons. For the capitalism thing, it's like, big and large is never really brought up.
By and large,
which is a great name.
It's such a good name.
Which is a fantastic name. It doesn't really seem to be the cause of any of their issues. But it's especially, I don't want to dwell on that too long, because it's especially the environmentalism thing. If you are an environmentalist as a person, mm-hmm. if that's your just philosophy, like it's good to, you know, be mindful of the earth and its health, you are that way. Because we all live here, right?
Okay.
Right? Like, oh, it's good to not pollute the environment because we're all going to die if you do. In this scenario, all of humanity is in space and happy and well cared for.
Michael, I think it's quite clear the implications of this film that there aren't that many people in the spaceship. So it's clear that these are just the ancestors of very wealthy people who could get into this spaceship, which is pretty horrifying.
That's a good point.
And I also think, yeah, it was about, you can't, I guess in this spaceship, in this artificial environment, you can't really connect to your humanity properly. And that's why we need the Earth. Like, we shouldn't just be looking for an out. We should take care of Earth. That's really important.
Yeah, except
the Earth isn't just there for us, Michael.
It is. And but like, it's like doing that really didn't solve the conflict of the film. Right? Like, the conflict of the film was like the whole robot ship was programmed to not let them remember Earth or to just keep them on their course.
Uh-huh.
But they're like, no, we're going back to Earth. And then they do. And then that's the end.
And well, then we get the little end credit sequence. So we know it all works out.
So like, I just... Like,
Michael, it's all about humanity. They had lost their humanity in this artificial environment, and they needed to get back to Earth to rediscover what it means to be a person.
I just didn't feel that at all. But I also do have like a...
Maybe your feelings are wrong.
Possibly. Well, I'm about to explain why they're wrong. Because I remember when I was a kid, I was a fucking big Pixar fan. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Toy Story.
Because you're a human.
Right. Well, but I mean, I was a human in their prime, too. I mean, sure. I was a young child, so I loved Toy Story. I even loved Bug's Life in the day. Loved Finding Nemo, loved The Incredibles. And I'm like, oh, this movie, Wall-E's coming out? All the critics are giving it an A+. It's about a space robot. I just, I very vividly remember seeing it and going, oh, okay. And so I just like, it's just always stuck with me is this movie was like, I don't know. I don't really connect to it. I just feel like the story is not very good.
I guess I remember seeing it and like, I remember watching and thinking, I've never seen anything like this. And I was blown away by it.
Hey, it is bold, which is good. I mean, it's not the fucking, you know, Incredibles 2, Toy Story 4, Monsters, Inc. 2. Like, it's a new thing.
Monsters University.
Sorry.
How dare you?
Like, the film starts and it's like, the Earth is dead. Here's all the trash piles.
And then here's a cute silent film.
Aren't we all fucked up? Yeah, here's 40 minutes of no dialogue. I'm like, whoa, okay.
You know, actually, as
you're
I
doing
was
doing a new thing.
I was trying to watch it with more of a critical eye, and I was like, this is just like a long Pixar short. And I was like, but I love Pixar shorts. So
well,
that's okay.
Actually basically my position, which is why I brought up The Paper Man. Because like, if this was a 20-minute film, just no humans, just about Ian Wally. Perfect. 10 out of 10, easily.
I love it. I really like this film. I'm sorry.
Well, why are you apologizing?
Because I don't. I think I'm going to get aggressive with you about how much I like this film.
You can like this film. I personally do not think it's very good.
I do think I like Finding Nemo more.
Okay, but sorry, you asked me what my favorite part is. My favorite part is easily, 100%, they just knocked it out with the robot designs. Now, you go ahead.
I really like, there are actually a lot of things I like about this film. I love that it's so adorable and dark. I just love that. I love Sigourney Weaver.
Which one's Sigourney Weaver?
Of Alien? She is the voiceover of the ship.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
That was fun.
Yeah, that's a really good casting.
I actually don't think there's any wasted time in this film. I'm really into it. I like all the side bits, the little robots, the rogue robots, the whole... I also think some of the heavy-handed, like, oh, what about society today stuff is actually more relevant today than it was in 2008. This idea of people being lost in technology and not knowing how to connect to each other.
Really? I don't buy that for a second. Oh, people are on Facebook? What about trees? That's what I think of when I hear that message.
But what about trees? Do you think about that?
That's a good point.
I don't know. I think it's good. I just like it. Okay?
I'm not... Please like it. I'm not...
Suck it, Stanley Kubrick. Stop making boring space films and make ones about cute robots in love.
That's the part I like about the film, is the robots in love.
I was yelling at Stanley Kubrick, not you.
Sorry. I'm very self-centered.
Also, I never enjoyed any of the silent films we watched, but I liked this. So maybe color has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. I mean Charlie Chaplin's cute.
Yeah, it's so funny that she said, like, they watch Buster Keaton and stuff. And, like, I never watched those and thought, oh, that's something I want to watch. Marcia was like, okay, I guess that's good in a world
where you don't have... We get it. He's on a train.
Right. If you don't have sound, I guess this is pretty good. But when I watched WALL-E, I never thought that.
Anyway, we've been rattling our fucking mouths off. Let's just run through the plot really quick with our intern's summary of the film.
You want to start off with Michael?
Sure. The film opens in space to the tune of Put On Your Sunday Clothes from Hello, Dolly. The opening is really fucking good, I think.
I think the space animation is really good. I remember
What do you mean space animation?
Oh, sorry. The scenes in space or at the Earth. You were talking about Toy Story, and they're like, if they had said the animation is good in the first line of a review, they failed.
Yeah.
I might have said that about WALL-E because it was just such a beautiful film.
Oh, I couldn't resist saying, like, well, I would say the design of the robot's good, but
which is kind of similar.
Similar, yeah. The Earth is not looking so great, and we zoom in on an adorable trash robot that is collecting and cubing. Oh, sure, he does do that. Cubing garbage from giant piles.
Did I spell that wrong?
No, I don't think so. He also has a cockroach pal. I just can't read.
Oh, sure. WALL-E wheels through the parking lot of by and large gas and over newspaper, the By and Large Times, which says the Earth is covered in too much trash. How is that not a commentary on corporate takeover? Anyway, big screen start.
It is, but I just don't feel like they go anywhere with that. They just say it.
I think that's why the Earth died.
It is, but that's...
Start playing videos that explain everything that's going on. People have left the planet and these little robots clean it up. WALL-E putters past a bunch of dead WALL-Es and takes the treads off one to repair himself, which comes back later. I thought it was a weirdly morbid thing to do in the first scene.
WALL-E arrives at the shipping container he calls home. Is it a shipping container? But it's like a truck, right?
Well, I thought it was a shipping container. I'm sorry.
Maybe it's a truck and shipping container.
Who knows?
Because I thought it had wheels. He has an aerial-esque collection of human stuff. Oh, I wish he would have sung. And enjoys watching old musical on VHS before he powers down. The next day, he heads outside to get solar charged and continues to clean up while collected who's its and what's its galore. And here's all that. I just wanted to say, like earlier we were talking about, or I wanted to bring up the fact that he has the power meter on his chest, yeah. Remember? And I just feel like with Pixar films... There's a little tendency for Pixar films to just go a little overboard on the emotional stuff.
I mean, 10 minutes of Up situation.
Exactly. Where it's like, I get it. It's sad. You know, or like Toy Story 3 is like, they're all like, oh, we'll kill ourselves together. I'm like, okay, Jesus. So when they do it in this film, I don't mind it too much, but I felt like it was just a little overboard. It's like,
that's such a sensible place to have that meter on a robot. Okay.
Hold on. Just, you can say it, but let me finish. First, like, oh, adorable robot. Oh, he's alone. Oh, he just wants love. It's like, okay, movie, I get it. By the way, he could die at any moment. It's like, movie, come on! I get it!
I have no problem being emotionally manipulated by a film, so this is not... I have a very strong memory of watching Up and just, I'm not a crier, but Jesus.
But there is a line somewhere where if like after
there is zero Pixar films I've seen where I thought they crossed that line.
I'm saying there is a line, so I'm not weird for having a line. If at the 10, after the opening of Up, like, all of his 100 puppies died, you'd be like, okay. You know what I mean? There is somewhere. And for me, for some reason, it's just a little sooner.
Fair enough.
All right.
Inside an old refrigerator, Wally finds something he's never seen before, a plant inside an old boot. After dropping the boot off at home, Wally gets distracted by a laser beam. The laser beam turns out to be a targeting device for a spacecraft landing.
Inside the spacecraft, a sleek egg robot appears. And by the way, when I say robot design, obviously I do mean Eve as well. I think she's an awesome design.
I did immediately look at her and think she was an Apple product, but now that makes sense.
I looked at her and said, that's Johnny Ive. I see it.
Your buddy.
My best friend. He has red socks. The new robot Eve is looking for something and tries to blow up Wally occasionally. He's in love.
Finally, he gets the courage to talk to her. They learn each other's names, Wally and Eve. But Eve won't tell Wally what her directive is. Oh, because that's how she asked his name. She goes, directive? But hers is classified.
Where are we? Oh, there you go. When a sandstorm blows through, Wally brings Eve to his house to show off his cool gadgets and gizmos. When he shows her the plant, she gets super excited, takes the plant, and shuts down into just a floating egg with a green light blinking.
Wally takes care of Eve best he can while she's not moving, but then a spaceship comes to collect her. What?
Guys, I'm happy at this point that the film is about robots and not humans. Because, like, if Wally was just dragging around some unconscious girl and, like, wrapping Christmas lights around her, we would be like, oh, he likes her.
He runs after her and manages to grab the ship as it takes off. The ship then arrives at a massive spaceship, the Axiom. I mean, just that sequence where he's going and then they, like, pass the sun and through galaxies. It's so beautiful.
It's very pretty. Absolutely.
It's really well done.
Absolutely.
I'm not bored like 2001.
Where are we?
Eve
is being sent away, and Wally chases after her. Inside the Axiom, there are hundreds of the blobby humans on their robo chairs, flying around, chatting on little TVs, and drinking sugary beverages. Which is like, all right, we get it.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's a little heavy-handed at times.
It is, but okay. When one big guy falls out of his chair, he can't even get up. Wally introduces himself, and the guy says his name is John.
I think that's John Ratzenberger, who is.
Like a guy from Pixar guy?
Yeah, he's in Toy Story, and Elle was in Cheers.
For some reason, my mind jumped to, like, Pixar executive. You mean the famous voice actor?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But then Wally spots Eve, and he's after her again. Wally has to get a lady named Mary, who is one of the witches in, Come on, Bette Midler. What the...
Focus, Pocus.
Hocus Pocus, yes, yes. The not Bette Midler character.
Wait, sorry, are you saying it's a Hocus Pocus reference or just...
No, that's the voice actor. Is that lady.
I thought you'd be like, Mary just like that. Like, a lot of people are named Mary.
No, sorry. Not Bette Midler, not Sarah Jessica Parker. I don't remember what her name is.
Oh, okay.
To get closer. When he accidentally disables her video screen, she acts like she hasn't even looked at her surroundings in, well, maybe ever.
Finally, we get to the captain's bridge. The captain is woken up by Otto.
Pause. That I did not realize that his name was Otto. A-U-T-O, like automatic. I was like, oh.
Until like the end of the film.
No, until I was writing this up.
Oh.
I did not get that at all. I
only recognized it. He was like, I'm going to turn you off. And there's a big switch to auto to manual.
Nope. Didn't even register. I've seen this movie more than once and I never realized
It's a cute detail. The captain's woken up by Otto, an excellent robot ripoff of HAL 9000. When the captain does the morning announcements, we learn that the humans have been on the Axiom for 700 years.
The captain's informed that Eve has returned positive. The captain pushes a big green button and a video plays announcing that Eve has found plant life, which means Earth can be recolonized. When the plant is placed in the ship's holodetector, the ship will return to Earth automatically. But
oh no. The plant is gone. Eve and Wally are chucked into the repair ward when Wally incorrectly assumes they're torturing. I cannot read. Torturing and dismantling Eve. He shuts the place down to rescue her and ends up releasing all the robots. An alert, caution, rogue robots, goes out to the whole ship while Eve and Wally go in search of the plant.
Eve leads Wally to an escape pod, which will blast him back to Earth, which we've talked about how adorable they are. But
ten,
when he
10 out of 10.
When he lifts himself up and sits on that little chair and he like moves his little wheel legs, it's so cute. And it shouldn't be because he's like a weird tank.
Seriously, have you ever? Well, here's another thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to ask me, like, philosophically, uh-huh. like, what is the essence of a great design? Mm-hmm. I always thought simplicity.
He is not simple.
He's not simple. At all. There's a lot of things that so make much up detail. Wally. There's a lot of detail on him. But he's still, like, perfect.
Yeah.
It's just a it's what Pixar did is fucking magical.
Yes. Suddenly, an elevator appears and the two robots hide. Their little go-for bot rolls in and deposits the plant, inside the pod and programs it to blast off. Wally runs in to get the plant, but he ends up blasting off at the pod. Oh, no. And then what, Michael?
Eve ejects herself to chase after the escape pod. Inside the pod, Wally sees that it's been set to self-destruct. Before Eve can reach the pod, it blows up. Suddenly, Wally flies by, using the pod's fire extinguisher as a jetpack.
What a fun sequence.
Very, very good. He has the plant. Eve takes it and gives Wally a big space hug and a little zap, which is a kiss. Wally and Eve enjoy a little fun space flight dance, and when they fly by the window, they startle two of the humans, John and Mary, who wave to the robot.
It's cute, like, I know them.
That's Wally!
That's Wally! Back in his quarters, the captain is researching Earth, like how to farm, dance, and make pizza. Eve shows up with the plant, and the captain sticks a little device to Eve's head, which enables him to access her recordings. He's shocked to see the dead planet, while Eve is touched that Wally took care of her while she was powered down.
Otto, who's a robot.
And is spelled with an A.
Yeah, A-U-T-O. Takes the plant away, saying that his directive forbids him from letting the Axiom return to Earth. Otto plays a message from the CEO of By and Large, played by Fred Willard, who admits that the cleanup of Earth has failed and humans will never return. The captain believes that things have changed and still wants to go back.
Otto gets in a scuffle for the plant and zaps Wally, frying his circuit board, and chucks him into the dump. Eve rescues Wally, but he's so fried and she needs to repair him. All his spare parts are on Earth, so Eve, with the help of the captain, who fights Otto and turns him off, returns the plant to the holo detector, sending the Axiom back to Earth. On Earth, Eve repairs Wally, but his memories are erased and he doesn't love musicals anymore.
Which is like, okay, you're doing a Dory thing. That's what I said when I saw this. Like, oh, this is a Dory. I get it.
It worked.
But it's like, you've already done a Dory. Do something else.
She doesn't own memory loss.
She does.
It's not like no one ever used memory loss as a plot device until Finding Nemo.
Doctors prescribe medicines like, oh, you have a Dory. Okay, but then Eve's spark of a kiss restores Wally's memories. Back at the ship, the captain and the humans are getting ready to rebuild their life on Earth. The camera zooms out, and we see many more plants on the outskirts of the city. The end credit sequence assures us that this works out in the end. So, before we call John, it's fine that we have different opinions. That's totally fine. That's totally fine.
But
all I want to say is, I think it's what you're saying, that the film is about humanity. Because as I think about that, as I'm reading it, then that's maybe the core of the divide that we have. Because that, I just don't find any meaning in that phrase. Like, oh, what is it, human? Because I just inherently like technology. I don't know what it is.
Or like, sure.
As a
vocabulary term, it is a little.
It's vague.
It's vague.
But like, I mean, and you're definitely right. There's parts where the captain is like, "Whoa, I've only seen screens, but a blue sky." And I don't know. I just felt like the movie has to make more of a case for that. Personally,
I guess I disagree because I already felt it was fringing on making that case too hard. So like they did it as well as they could in my
view. The case I'm talking about is that a human would actually react that way.
I think there's something fundamental to the human experience that was missing in this world.
They didn't have trees.
All right.
But I'm being kind of serious.
I think that this is the result of having a completely artificial life, that you would have something missing. and that would make you not have genuine human connection. And
okay, so then that's my problem then. They didn't show what they were missing. They just said, hey, remember Earth? Let's go. And then they went. You know what I mean? So you
they
can
absolutely showed us these drones of they people showed that who they had were... no life and no human connection.
They were happy.
Were they?
Yes.
Were they?
But that's what I'm saying. You have to interpret that they weren't. They were always smiling and hoop-a-boo, I'm on my iPad. You know what I mean? They were always having a good time. But I mean, if you tell a simple Pixar-like basic story.
So they should have been more miserable.
They should have been at little sad at all.
It wasn't even that they were sad or happy. They were just nothing because they weren't experiencing anything.
I mean, I feel like if you watched a live feed of just me and my life, you would say the same thing. Oh, look at him. He goes to work. Oh, he goes home. He plays video games. Doesn't he know the outside? You know what I mean? It's the same idea.
Michael, do you know about outside?
All right. Let's go to our first segment that we, or our last segment that we call Bro Call. And we're going to call our brother John. He's going to tell us why Wally is so good. Call brother John.
Michael, Earth is great.
Shut the fuck up.
I mean, there's grass.
Shut.
And blue
I've
sky.
Seen it. I've seen it. Not impressed, personally. I'm still going to grade this movie pretty high, though.
John Flaherty.
Hello, John.
Hey, John.
You're on Flaherty's on Films. We're talking about the film WALL-E. Have you seen it, and what do you think about it?
Wow, that was really good.
That's pretty good, man.
Thank you. I nailed it.
You did.
I think it's a delightful film. Doesn't deserve to be on the new AFI, but delightful. Love it.
Love that you're out there with that. Continue with your thoughts.
I mean, what besides the word delightful can you really use to describe that movie?
Do you want some to work off of? We could tell you our thoughts.
Sure, why not?
I thought that the story of the robots falling in love and the humans all getting back to Earth were not as connected as I would have liked.
Yeah, I suppose that's right. I suppose that's fair.
I disagree.
I did like how they provided so much humanity with so little script. I thought that was nice.
Yeah. Look at him using the word humanity. People think that when they watch this film.
We've had a lot of discussions about humanity. The robots are cute, aren't they?
Very, very adorable. I kept thinking of WALL-E as a cat, and you know how that biased me.
I mean, I'm sure that's actually what they were going for. I mean, like a lovable pet kind of thing.
Cats aren't lovable.
Definitely. And I appreciated it. I was won over by it.
Perfect.
Definitely doesn't deserve to be on the new FAI.
And why not?
I really
why not?
What is that movie doing for the new FAI? It didn't make a ton of money. It didn't win a ton of awards.
It did win awards.
Not culturally relevant, outside of We're All Gonna Die.
That's a pretty big cultural relevance.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Like, okay, cool, you called it. It's not like
you
it's
did.
Like, I knew. Come on.
I didn't need cute robots to spell it out for me.
I've seen Dan for Tomorrow.
It's not technologically relevant, even though it is pretty. Eh.
Okay. What do you grade it?
I grade it a B+.
That's a very nice grade.
That's an awesome grade. John, thank you so much for this discussion.
Thank you for letting me watch a good movie.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Clayton, what do you grade the film?
Okay. I also want to defend, I think when Junis suggested this, I thought it was kind of a weird suggestion for the AFI. Because, like, all Pixar movies are pretty good, except for the Cars sequels. You know what? Don't even
care
for Cars.
Have you ever seen Brave? I've never seen Brave.
I liked Brave.
Oh, okay. I've never seen it.
I really liked Coco, which is also one that people
Oh, the Coco film. Have you seen The Good Dinosaur?
No.
Oh, I heard that's bad.
What are your top three Pixar films? Because you're like, no way is this my favorite. So
yeah, Finding Nemo, The Incredibles.
You like The Incredibles more than this film?
Yeah. I don't like the film that much. But I respect this film for just being so unique and out there.
Sure.
And then Toy Story, probably.
Sure. I think this is my second favorite film of Pixar's because the Finding Nemo's.
What do you grade it?
So I was going to say, I do want to defend it that I do agree with Junis that it's pretty culturally relevant. Of the points they were trying to make are actually a bit more relevant now than they were in 2008, perhaps.
No,
and,
we're fine.
You know, the award winning stuff. And like Sam said, it was the first something
live action
for something.
It's nice to live action to my in the Pixar segment. Thing.
But then it also kind of, you know, talked about this whole like, why is there an animated film category and not like just them in the like? It's all pretty good stuff. So
I was thinking that, like, they used to call it global warming and now they call it climate change. What's that? Anyway,
so I'm gonna give it an A minus.
I think that's a great grade.
What do you give it?
Well, again, like, it's so much. This is a very cool movie. It's a very interesting movie.
It's very good. Like, it's just a good movie.
I don't think it's very good. I think it's very interesting. So I'll give it a B+. It's definitely better than Monsters, Inc. 2, which I've not seen.
Monsters University is actually pretty good.
Is it really good?
I mean, it's not really good, but it's very fun to watch. I would recommend it.
I'll give this movie a B+.
It's better than Cars.
Sure. So who are we sponsored by?
Apple.
And what do they make?
They make iPods, so you can put all your music into just one little device.
Oh yeah, how many songs? How many songs?
Probably 100.
Probably 100 songs. I don't even know that many songs.
Ugh, it's crazy.
Get Lucky. That's that Daft Punk one. I don't know that one.
You don't know it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know of it. So that's one. I would put that song.
Are we gonna name 100 songs?
I'm just saying, like, where do you even go from there? There's a lot of opportunities.
So hard. Anyway, that was Flares on Films. Let's get in our random generator to see what's next. And this is going to be a not fun one. Just for you folks at home to see what's behind the scenes, John Flaherty, our brother, made us a generator. But to make it a little more even, it's every other week fun, not fun. Obviously, Wally was a fun one. So
does Pirates of the Caribbean rank as fun?
Yes.
I'm excited to see that.
Heathers. Oh, that's kind of fun. That's wrong. Anyway, we're going to watch Heathers.
All right. Excellent. I'm excited. Not seen that. Apparently, Christian Slater is a big video gamer. Aww, I learned that recently.
That's very cute.
Anyway, that's for Flaherty's on Films. Join us next week.
And cut.